From the stage of Suntory Hall in Tokyo, konnichiwa. This is Critical Thinking.
Another opening, another show in Philly, Boston, or Baltimore. A chance for stage folks to say hello. Another opening of another show. Another job that you hope at last will make your future forget your past. Another pain where the ulcers grow. Another opening of another show. 4 weeks you rehearse and rehearse. 3 weeks and it couldn't be worse. 1 week, will it ever be right? Then out of the hat is that big first night. The overture is about to start. You cross your fingers and hold your heart. It's curtain time and away we go. Another opening of another show.
Another opening, another show. In Philly, Boston, or Baltimore. A chance for stage folks to say hello. Another opening of another show. Another job that you hope at last will make your future forget your past. Another pain where the ulcers grow. Another opening of another show. 4 weeks you rehearse and rehearse. 3 weeks and it couldn't be worse. But it will never be right. Then out of the hat is that big first night. The overture is about to start. You cross your fingers and hold your heart. It's going to time and away we go. Another opening of another opening of
Welcome to the first ever On the Road edition of Critical Thinking. I'm your host and producer for this series, Andrew Patner, and I'm joined in the Far East by our associate producer, Matt DeStefano. We're following the Chicago Symphony Orchestra on its Far East Asia tour with its principal conductor, Bernard Haitink. We're speaking to you today from Tokyo, and we hope over the next few weeks to bring you some sense of what the orchestra is experiencing here, how audiences are responding, and some of the things that happen along the way, as well as some of the personalities involved. The orchestra has already played in Yokohama, Japan, where they had a great success at the Minato Mirai Hall, and they've had one concert so far here in Tokyo at the world-famous Suntory Hall, a matinee of Mahler's Symphony No. 6. So there are 8 concerts to go when you are first hearing this, but no concerts can happen without the stages being set up for each concert, and in this case, set up and broken right back down after each performance. Let's join CSO stage manager Kelly Cairns as he explains to Matt what goes on in a setup.
Today we're only rehearsing Mahler 6 and we're performing Mahler 6 tonight, so that in itself is a little bit of a break. So we just need to take our time here before the orchestra gets here. We've got everything up here and it looks pretty good backstage as concerning the space, and we'll go from here, you know.
So what kinds of things do you keep in mind at this stage of the game?
On stage space, it's a big piece. You've got to take a look at the contour of the upstage wall and the offstage and fit the brass and the percussion and the harps and the basses and the celeste, which kind of form the outer contour. Different halls have a little bit of, you know, they have contours that kind of take space away, and I'm seeing a little bit of that here. But we should be okay. It always seems to come out in the end. Sometimes you don't think it will, but then it always does.
Now you make the setup sheet?
Yeah, I do. Yes, I do make the setup sheets. Patsy, yes, she's got that. Remember, she had 207 with the. She had the wood rack off stage, and she had the adjustable rack.
Right, they don't, I don't remember why they.
No, that, she can do that. But we've got
I know
her.
Cynthia gets the 5 small ones on top of the 7
right.
Tam tam rack.
So as soon as we see her, we'll have to tell her.
I don't know if she can't move it, or I'll move it for her.
Then we got the 9 horns and 6-4-1. So what I mean by the contour is you can see this wall up here. It sort of bites into your space a little, so we'll have to and then we have to judge the risers. So basically, we lay it in first, our count, and then we go from there.
Is this elevator set up like most halls?
Well, each hall is different. Like some of the halls, like in Vienna, are built in the 1700s, so of course you have nothing like that, you know. The modern halls like this all seem to have a piano lift. There isn't one in Carnegie. They have an elevator and a stage, but it isn't one that's as accessible as this. This is considered a piano lift, which is the best kind of elevator because it's the biggest and it's usually center stage, you know.
Orchestra Hall has that?
Yes. I'm not sure when it was installed in Orchestra Hall. I believe it was all the way back. I think it's probably been there as long as the hall. It was probably operated by Wench System in the beginning, in 1905, and then where it's block and tackle, I believe. But it's been there forever.
Come on with the cello. 203 stays there. That one, Cisco, comes off stage.
Lee Kuo, I know that a teenage John Bruce Yeh joined the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in the 1970s, but I think that my recollection is that you were the first adult Chinese member, I guess the first adult Asian member of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra.
I don't know about Asian member because like Joyce Noel.
Oh yes, of course.
Nancy Park, they were before me, like 2 years before me. But I was the first Chinese musician born in China, joined Chicago Symphony Orchestra. As a matter of fact, I joined a world-class orchestra anywhere.
You were the first.
I was the first one. And then a year later, one more musician joined the Los Angeles Philharmonic, a violinist. So,
and what year was that that you joined the CSO?
1988, the beginning of the 1988 season.
And you're from Shanghai?
Yes.
And your training was
in Shanghai.
In Shanghai.
Shanghai Conservatory, Music High School, Music Primary School. And actually the primary music school, or so-called the children's music school, was established by my mother.
Who is
a
living
pianist.
And is 97 years
97,
old?
Still living in Shanghai.
Yeah. And still very appreciative and active about music.
Absolutely. Was so looking forward for Chicago Symphony's visiting because she lived in Chicago for 15 years.
Yes.
Often came to rehearsal, and everybody at the hall knew her very well, Captain Yates, and all the security guard, and many musicians want to see her. She moved back to China 5 years ago.
Well, that's another reason that I know you're excited about this tour, but I think that it wasn't even long after you joined the orchestra that you were already talking up and trying to persuade people both on the Chinese side and on the Chicago Symphony Orchestra side that this orchestra should go to China. It's the last major Western orchestra to go to China. Maybe give us a little background on what your hopes were and where we're going to see things going.
I will never forget the first time I sit in the rehearsal with Maestro Shoti. I think it was Tchaikovsky Fifth and Swan Lake Suite. We were preparing for a recording, and it just blew me away. The first time sitting in this orchestra and play. I remember when I was like 9 or 10 years old, somebody got a record, long playing record, of Fritz Reiner conduct Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Tchaikovsky Fifth, and I think Fidelio Overture or something like that. And just everybody in China was just see Chicago Symphony Orchestra is something in the heaven. Mm-hmm. It's so high, so highly regarded. Yes, it's a little mysterious because by that time, I say like around 60 or 70s, not early 70s, Philadelphia went. Then late 70s, Boston went. And soon after, Cleveland, New York Philharmonic, they all went once, twice, three times or something like that. But Chicago Symphony is so far away, so high, but never came like that.
So that maybe added to the mystery and to the allure.
Anticipation.
Yeah. You know?
And as soon as I got in the orchestra, I immediately talked to Maestro Schulte, actually. Say, Maestro Schulte, do you think there will be any chance we can go to China? I think for some political view or, you know, for some reason, and Maestro Schulte say he hesitated. Mm-hmm. He's very hesitant. He said, I was thinking about Russia, not China yet.
Right.
Then I talked to Henry Fogel. Henry Fogel, you know, he's a fan of Chinese culture, Chinese cuisine. He said, I would very much like So I got connected him and the cultural attaché from the Chinese Consul General. And the two of them sit together. Actually, three of us sit down in his room, in his office, Henry's office, talk about the possibility. And already exchange of the ideas and all these plans, proposals. Unfortunately, next year, Tiananmen Square massacre happened. That completely stopped the whole thing. So that's the beginning of it, 1988.
Right. And I know that Daniel Barenboim very much wanted to be able to take the orchestra to China. Was there a round two where you tried again? And
yes, 2004, Heidi Lucas, the manager of orchestra in charge of touring, and I went to China, negotiated with three different presenters for the possibility of bringing the orchestra to China. Maestro Barenboim agreed. And finally, there was a time locked to, you know, for us to go. We negotiated into details. Looks like it's very hopeful. It will happen. And Mr. Barenboim fell Spain.
That's when he had his
And had a back injury.
Right.
So, of course, this again being canceled. So this is the third
time. So now
time
you
try.
Can all, we're sitting in Tokyo and you can almost smell it. We're getting closer, right?
Yes. I just can't wait. Can't wait.
Were you involved in some of these discussions and negotiations this time?
Yes. From time to time, I think the management and the China side and use me as a bridge to pass information, try to get understand each other. Mm-hmm. And
do you feel like you're in a James Bond movie? Or?
In a way.
Yeah.
And I'm so happy and I'm so pleased that I can do that.
Yeah. Especially now that there are so many Chinese in the orchestra.
Correct. Or say Chinese origin.
Yes.
Like say, including the two musicians who were born in Taiwan, all together we have 11 people.
And that must be more than any other major orchestra outside of Asia.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. I know the statistic, so I can say
it is
1/10 of the orchestra member.
Wow. Are Chinese.
Are Chinese.
Yeah. And then there are also our Japanese and Korean origin or birth. So,
absolutely.
And, of course, I think that's one of the things that is wonderful for this orchestra to show to the world. When you have orchestras that are very exclusive or nationalistic, let's say, that this is an orchestra that uses a blind audition system and that once somebody joins the orchestra, he or she is a member of the orchestra, period. It's not like a Chinese member of the orchestra or a woman member of the orchestra. So on the Chicago side, that's also going to be exciting, I think, to not only show here is an American orchestra with a Taiwanese-born concertmaster, but also here's an American orchestra where everybody is, wherever he or she fits into that orchestra.
Yeah. I think this is a strength of Chicago Symphony Orchestra, maybe many American orchestras too, and open-minded, and being able to take all the talents from all kinds of background and put into this one unify the tradition. The tradition is so strong, they really can immerse all those different background, different ethnic musicians into one very unified artistic strength.
The orchestra is going to Shanghai and Beijing, not only as the two principal cities in China, two principal cultural cities, including the capital city and the recent Olympic city, but we also have in the orchestra people who are trained in the conservatories of both Shanghai and Beijing.
Yes. Qing Ho is from Central Conservatory. Sandou Xia from Central Conservatory.
Those are Central Conservatory is the Beijing Conservatory.
Is in Beijing. Mm-hmm. And Shanghai Conservatory, we have, and interesting enough, we all came from the same teacher's studio. Myself, Lei Ho, Yan Qing, Yu, unfortunately she could not come this time, and Rongyan Tang, we all studied with same teacher.
And at different times, because there's some age spread there.
I was the very first one.
Yeah. Who is this teacher?
Professor Zheng, Zheng Shisheng, very famous. He's about over 70 now.
And what was it about him that he was able not only to produce these excellent musicians, but also ones who were perhaps especially ready to make it into a top U.S. orchestra?
I think besides his own ability as a wonderful violinist, he had an advantage as his background is coming from overseas. His family is from, I forgot, Singapore or Indonesia. Mm-hmm. I forgot. Mm-hmm. So this is why when he came back to Shanghai to study, he still had the resource of his overseas relatives to give him a lot of new recordings from the West, which was not possible at that time to obtain in China.
Right.
So in China, mostly at that time, from 50s and 60s, was East Bloc from Soviet Russia and Czech or East Germany.
Right.
Like we have plenty of that. Yes. But not very current new high-pitched recording, new Milstein recording made with Chicago Symphony. In the 50s, no, at that time we could not get it. Mm-hmm. She got it. Or he got it. Mm-hmm. I still remember one of very important element of his teaching is got student to his apartment and listened to his new recordings. I remember that I heard the new, I think it's a Beethoven concerto recording with Boston of Heifetz at his apartment. They made that in the 50s and we heard it in the 60s, which is incredible at that time in China.
Yes.
So the open-mindedness and all the rich information made him a very, very visionary teacher.
Yeah, it sounds that way. You were just in Shanghai briefly on your way here to Japan to join up with the orchestra. What's the buzz there? What's the mood? What's the anticipation in terms of Chicago Symphony coming there?
You know, because the financial crisis, recent financial crisis, so there was some difficulty about finance our trip there. And so the negotiation went on for a long time. This is why they advertised, officially start to sell tickets very late. Mm. We all worried, for such a short time, how can you sell the tickets? Not sure enough, when I was there, the first concert was already sold out. And even the Chinese side, they thought it was a miracle. I remember the person in charge of the marketing at the Grand Theater Shanghai, he personally told me, he said, I just could not believe that. And he said, that is a very good proof that the Chicago Symphony's reputation among Chinese music lovers.
I visited China for the first time in the spring of 1985. So it was before Tiananmen, but it was after so much of the opening was going on. In many ways, it was
a great time
to go there because things had not gone into any different extreme after that, be it capitalistic or political or whatever. And also, there were so few individual travelers still then that anywhere you wanted to go, you could just sort of go because nobody really knew what they were supposed to do with you. So we only took trains that were the regular, slower trains, but that people were regular Chinese people were traveling on. And of course, eventually people will start a conversation because you're the one non-Chinese person on the whole train.
That's right.
Or one or two if you're traveling with somebody else. And something I will never forget was a man who kept looking and looking and looking at me and the friend I was traveling with. And then we started to talk a bit, and he had very fine English. Mm-hmm. And I just could sort of imagine a bit of his story, it being 1985, the way he appeared his age, that this was someone who probably had been an intellectual of some kind and had really suffered in the Cultural Revolution period, mm-hmm. and was still just sort of hesitantly making his way back, probably not in the field that he had trained in. In any event, we got to where I was from. I said, Chicago. Chicago Symphony Orchestra. I said, yes. He said, Fritz Reiner is the greatest conductor of all time with Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Now, you were saying this from your memories, and he says, I have LPs of, and he mentions Tchaikovsky Fifth and the others, and I just felt at this point he's being pretty open. I'm going to be somewhat direct. Yeah. There don't seem to be other people paying attention. And I said, you had LPs or you have LPs? And he thought I meant because of CDs. He said, no, LPs. I said, no, do you still have them? Oh, yes. And I said, but how did you have them? He said, oh, as a matter of fact, I just got them back. When the word came we were going to be taken away, I buried them mm-hmm. more than 1 mile from my house in the yard of somebody that I knew. And my promise was I would not come back for them until some long time after things were better. And so he had waited until 1984, 1985, went there. His friend was gone. Other people had the house. He somehow explained his story, went and dug, and there were his LPs. And as he told me this story, the years fell away from his face and the excitement. And he said, is Chicago Symphony any good now? Without Fritz Reiner, And I said, I think it's still quite a good orchestra. But he said, I haven't heard them. And I don't hear about them now because it was a combination of the time warp he was living in, but also the fact they hadn't visited and that there had been such adulation for these Reiner LPs. So it's interesting to hear it from another side. But my guess is that while that story might be an extreme one, that in some ways encapsulates this passion for Western classical music and for a kind of style of performing that is identified with Chicago. And I would imagine that all those things together then add to this anticipation.
Absolutely. When people in China ask me this question, what's the characteristic? How do you describe Chicago Symphony differently with New York Philharmonic, Boston, or Cleveland, or, so on and so forth? I thought about this question. I would say, overall, that's the most American orchestra, mm-hmm. truly represent the style of American symphonic playing. That means flexibility, the range of dynamic, and the rich color layers, and be able to tackle any kind of repertoire. I say Vienna Philharmonic, fantastic orchestra. My favorite string sound, I heard them play Bartok program mm-hmm. with Mr. Barenboim, Carnegie Hall. There's no comparison with mm-hmm. us. Mm-hmm. But we can go either end. Now we play beautiful Jupiter Symphony, Mozart, and we can go all the other end, Stravinsky or anything. Mm-hmm. And will be sound wonderful. I say this is what the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. While Cleveland, Boston, they have their own tradition, very refined orchestra, very European, and Philadelphia has their famous sound. But overall, mm-hmm. you can get the best package through Chicago Symphony Orchestra. That's the reason. I say, see, this is not only my own opinion. Right now, everybody says so.
Right,
okay?
Right,
this
right.
is, international recognition already.
Yeah. But at least it helps to put it in the context of why Chicago and China, yeah, and what you want them to hear. What do you want or what do you hope that the members of the orchestra will get from the experience of going to Shanghai and Beijing?
I very much like them to see that the country I was born, the rich cultural heritage and people. Right now, China is in the period of transition. So I keep telling my colleagues, see, the China experience will be a contradicting and contrasting experience. You see the best, you see the worst. And you see the most hopeful things and might be most disappointing things. They all happen together. This is why China is interesting. And you will see this energy and the potential of China, and you still see a lot of problem still mm-hmm. exist mm-hmm. from the system, from the all kinds of turmoil we have been through.
So you're hoping that the members of the orchestra will just have a general exposure and more information and some direct experience.
Exactly.
And you already have told them that that experience is going to be complex and contradictory, but better to see it for yourself,
exactly.
Have some experience for yourself.
Exactly. I had a previous experience. In 2002, I brought about 40 musicians
right.
from Chicago Symphony, went back to Shanghai and mixed with Shanghai Symphony Orchestra, played for a festival. And I always will remember then concertmaster Samuel Maggett and said, after the, you know, people said Sam will not travel to Indiana without a passport, something like that. But he's, you know, he's such a Midwestern, you know, mm-hmm. just, you know, mm-hmm. really Chicago. And so took me long time to convince him to go. He was very, very, you know,
hesitant,
you
resistant,
know.
Yeah.
And he also brought his wife Miriam mm-hmm. went mm-hmm. with him. So at the end, very last day of the trip, there was the how do you say, bon voyage mm-hmm. reception, you know, from the presenter in Shanghai, and he was invited to speak something, say a couple of words about his experience. He said, "Let's have a toast for the future capital of the world, Shanghai." You know, uh-huh. from his mouth to
yes,
speak about
yes,
that's
yes.
the 1 week experience he got from China.
Yeah.
I really hope all my colleagues from Chicago Symphony Orchestra will get this kind of experience. Yes, lots of problem. There is a lot of need to be improved, changed, but full of hope and a lot of joy for them to see it.
There's one other group we haven't mentioned, and we should mention them. And then we're very much looking forward to seeing Shanghai with you for the radio and for our website as well. But kind of to set the scene before we get there, the music students there, I imagine they are really anticipating this visit. And I'm wondering if some of the people in the orchestra are going to have to get bodyguards or body armor when everybody wants to meet them or audition for them or give them a CD or something. Do you have a sense of how that's going to be when the conservatory students in these two rival conservatories and cities have a chance to actually meet the members of the orchestra?
I'm sure it will happen. However, the timing wasn't perfect.
Uh-huh.
It will not be perfect because the conservatories, all the schools are in winter recession.
Right.
They coordinated this time with the Chinese New Year. As a matter of fact, the day of our arrival, next day, I think it's February 9th, is the last day of celebration. You know, traditionally, Chinese New Year will be celebrated for 15 days.
Right.
That's the very last day. That's the Lantern Festival.
Mm-hmm.
So the students still in their home. But many
and people in China tend to go home to their home city
exactly.
for the Chinese New
exactly,
Year holiday.
Exactly, yeah. exactly. But still many students remained
mm-hmm.
In a city, and they were certainly jammed to the concert. And consider another situation. The tickets are very expensive.
Yes, yes.
Very expensive. And many students will not be able to afford. As a matter of fact, this is one subject I would like to discuss with the management and union. Mm-hmm. Or the committee, and to let some faculty members of the conservatory or the music students to come to our rehearsal.
Yeah. Yeah,
to sit in the
that
rehearsal.
Would be great if that could happen. Yeah. But you have to, it has to be a group decision, and you have management and the union. But it would be wonderful either if they could come or if some of the players could visit the conservatory.
Or if some of players will, I will connect them, like Blair Milton, and very much like to talk to the violin faculty. And
are you going to be able to concentrate on playing the viola?
I doubt it now.
Li Kuo-Cheng, it's a real pleasure, and I know this has been both a lifelong dream and now a more than 20-year dream in Chicago for you.
True.
And congratulations that it's about to happen, and we're excited that we're going to be able to share it with you and also observe some of these experiences through your eyes when we get to China.
Thank you. It's my pleasure.
You're listening to our On the Road edition of Critical Thinking. I'm your host and producer, Andrew Patner, speaking to you from Tokyo, Japan. We're following the Far East Asia tour of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and its principal conductor, Bernard Haitink. We're heard over 98.7 WFMT Chicago and also free streaming over WFMT.com, and we've added a host of features with our new off-mic weblog of WFMT that we're helping to break in from this tour. If you go to our homepage at WFMT.com, there are photos, there are videos, there are postcards, there is text, there's all kinds of things that we're developing each day as we go along on this three-week tour with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. Orchestra members work extremely hard. They work extremely hard from their earliest childhood, really, to become the master professional musicians that they are, and then they keep working to play at the level that we have all come to expect from the Chicago Symphony Orchestra. But that's not all they do, and that's not all the work that they do. Many, if not most, of the members of the orchestra also teach. And those who teach very often teach while on the road and even while on an international tour. Matt DeStefano paid a visit to a masterclass here in Tokyo conducted by Taga Larsson, member of the trumpet section of the CSO.
Chicago Symphony Orchestra, Taga Larsson.
Again, very nice to be able to come and talk to you guys and listen to you play and offer a little bit of instruction. Louder. So, sound still carries me. It's not so... There's still a freedom to the sound that it's projecting. Projection more towards the back of the hall. Maybe not so with the sound being pressed or forced, but with more direction towards it. Really throwing it all the way, far away.
Taga Larsson, Matt DeStefano, and young trumpet players at a studio somewhere in Tokyo. Music you heard tonight from Cole Porter's Kiss Me Kate, another opening, another show, the original Broadway cast. Fritz Reiner conducting the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in music of Tchaikovsky. No, not the Fifth Symphony. It wasn't easily electronically available to us here in Tokyo. We gave you another piece with the same forces that you know quite well. And then Adolf Bud Herseth, the legendary past principal trumpet of the Chicago Symphony Orchestra in Daniel Barenboim's recording of the Fifth Symphony of Gustav Mahler. We'd like to thank Peter Worf, Don Mueller, and Gordon Carter, back in Chicago, for helping us on the technical side to bring you this special edition of Critical Thinking from Tokyo. We'd like to thank the Chicago Symphony Orchestra and Rachel Alexander, Vice President of Public Relations, for all the assistance that they have afforded to us thus far on this tour. We'd like to thank our funders, Alphawood Foundation and Draupner LLC, a Chicago-based private equity firm, as well as anonymous friends of this program who have made our coverage of this tour possible. Drop us a line. Let us know what you think of our on-the-road coverage. It's RENTAP, that's Patner spelled backwards, R-E-N-T-A-P at AOL.com. Be sure to visit us on the web as well at WFMT.com. You can see our photographs, videos, other features that we're putting together, and reports from the tour. You can also link directly to the photography of master photographer Todd Rosenberg working with the Chicago Symphony Orchestra on this tour. And, of course, anytime you can visit WFMT.com/critical thinking. And experience the free Critical Thinking podcast. Matt DeStefano is our invaluable associate producer. Not only has he brought you some special segments that you heard in tonight's broadcast, he's also been responsible for all editing and production of these programs from Asia. I'm Andrew Patner. Matt and I hope that we'll see you next week, well, if you're in Shanghai.